This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for January 11th, 2018. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. This week, the Trump administration's Department of Homeland Security announced it would end the TPS, temporary protected status, for 200,000 Salvadorans living in the United States, adding to the list of countries struck from the humanitarian program. Today, we look at this and other anti-immigrant policies from the Trump presidency. We start with Rachel Reyes, Communication Director for the Center for Migration Studies in New York City. So as a center that follows immigration policy, we'd like to get your perspective on the overall status of the Trump administration's hostile immigration stances and policies. But we want to lead with the administration's gutting of current TPS or temporary protected status for a number of countries and growing. At the end of last year, Trump announced 45,000 Haitians will lose their status next year. Nicaragua and Sudan have also lost their status and now just announced 200,000 Salvadorans living in the U.S. under TPS status for more than a decade will have to leave the United States by September 2019. Rachel, can you tell us what this policy means for Salvadorans, Haitians, and others who have made their home in this country? And then we'll talk more about this exclusionary policy shift. But talk with us about these impacts.
Sure. So there's about a total of 325,000 people in the United States who receive TPS. The majority of those, as you mentioned, are the countries El Salvador, Honduras, and Haiti. Our organization, the Center for Migration Studies of New York, we issued a report last summer and have done some follow-up studies and follow-up releases of statistics on these recipients. And we've found that the TPS beneficiaries from those main countries, El Salvador, Honduras, and Haiti, the population from El Salvador, Honduras, reside in about 205,900 households here in the United States. They also have a total of about 273,200 U.S.-born children, so these children being U.S. citizens. The main impact of returning these populations back to their home countries would either separate families or force these U.S. children and the entire family units to return to countries that are not stable in our perspective. The countries of El Salvador and Honduras are suffering from increasing gang violence. El Salvador specifically has been considered one of the most dangerous, most violent places in the world. Haiti is still recovering from natural disasters that have affected the country and do not have the infrastructure to receive their nationals. Now, the reasons why that the Department of Homeland Security has decided to end TPS for these countries, however, is because in their perspective, these countries are ready to receive these people back. In terms of other impacts that could happen to the United States, there's an economic impact. I'm not an economic expert myself, but our study also revealed that about 61,100 of the 205,900 households with TPS recipients have mortgages. So by requiring these recipients to return to their home countries, there'd be an economic loss.
There are a number of things, as you noted. One, the great number of, in particular in the case of El Salvador, 192,700 American-born children, 88% participate in the labor force, 88% of Salvadorans who are here under TPS, a quarter of Salvadorans, so I'm talking specifically about Salvadorans, I think you're speaking generally, have mortgages, but then there's the economies of the countries that they're sending back remittances to having a big impact, a ripple effect on families back in their home countries.
Yes, the TPS recipients here in the United States, they send back money to their home countries. And though that money not only helps their own family back home, but also helps with rebuilding the economy and helping countries such as Haiti recover from the disasters from which they received, from which TPS had been initially designated.
Let's take a quick look then at TPS and why temporary protected status has been initiated. It was signed into law in 1990, actually under George Bush, as I understand it from reporting. Usually it's applicable to countries who are affected by armed conflict, natural disasters, or other strifes. And in the case of El Salvador, it was initially civil war. Then it was the two earthquakes in 2001. And then in 2016, the U.S. government extended a TPS for the reasons of drought, poverty, and widespread gang violence. So the United States is able to continue to monitor the situation and renew this TPS status, even though, like in Haiti, it was initially instituted because of earthquakes. But in the past, administrations have been sensitive to what those situations are that TPS recipients would be returning to. Do you want to talk about this different perspective, this different tact that the Trump administration has taken with TPS, and then we can talk a little bit about their policies on immigration in general?
I guess just to say in response to that, the end of TPS for these nationals from certain countries indicates the administration's continued efforts to restrict immigration to the United States and to also encourage immigrants to leave the United States.
Can we talk about some of those specific, if you want to comment on any of the specific policies that the administration is looking at right now? We know that DACA is under close scrutiny and it goes back and forth. We can't quite tell where Trump falls on that. The dismantling of the Central American Minors Program, where refugee children can join their parents. The termination, as we said, of TPS for Haiti, Nicaragua, Sudan, now El Salvador, looking Honduras is the next up. And the so-called chain migrations, where families can join family members, and the elimination of the so-called visa diversity program. Do you want to touch upon any of these symptoms we see in the headlines right now of what the Trump administration's stance is on immigrants living in our country?
Yeah, just since taking office in January 2017, we've seen almost immediately these efforts to restrict immigration. It all began with those executive orders, mainly the travel ban, or also called the Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. The update on that is that in December, the Supreme Court allowed the third version of this travel ban to take effect, so allowing the Trump administration to bar nationals from predominantly Muslim countries, although it also includes North Korea. We've also seen in the last year, as you mentioned, that in around September, the Trump administration had also resumed refugee admissions to the United States, but had decreased the admissions to a cap of 45,000 a year. Previously, under President Barack Obama, we saw admissions at least at 84,000, and then they had announced in 2017 an increase to 110,000, but like I said, Trump has decreased that to 45,000. In November of last year is when we saw a lot of announcements that were going to restrict admissions from those Central American countries. So mm-hmm. You saw the announcements from ending TPS for Haiti and for Nicaragua. That was also the time when the announcement to no longer accept new applications for the Central American Minors Program, which allows refugee children from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, countries that are very much affected by gang violence, to join their lawfully present parents here in the United States. Mm-hmm. In September of last year, that's when the Trump administration announced the end of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, so DACA, allowing certain DACA recipients to renew their applications, but also meaning that many DACA recipients who didn't qualify for renewals were going to start losing their status. They would no longer have the authority to work in the United States. They were no longer protected from deportation for the certain period of time, about 2 years, when an application is granted. And now we're seeing as you might have seen, especially with TV reporters being allowed in the room of negotiations on immigration, mm-hmm. that DACA is being negotiated among various politicians. Trump wants to condition the protections or for Dreamers or DACA recipients on the build of a border wall, which he was promoting during his entire campaign, and on the end of the diversity visa program and a significant decrease of family-based visas.
Can you talk a little bit more about what this so-called chain migration is that Trump keeps on referring to that he wants to eliminate?
Yeah, so in my previous answer, I mentioned family-based visas, and that's actually the chain migration terminology that he is using. Mm-hmm. So U.S. citizens and lawful permanent residents, which we also call green card holders, can petition the U.S. government to bring over certain close family members, so parents, children, siblings. Those that then immigrate to the United States and acquire lawful permanent status or citizenship can submit their own petitions for family members. So therefore, you get a chain of migration through these petitions and visas and families. Mm-hmm. The process is also commonly referred to as family reunification, mm-hmm. mainly because we value bringing families together, keeping mm-hmm. families together. So Trump wants to significantly decrease the number of these visas. He wants to slash the number of green cards from about 1 million annually to half of that over a decade. And it's startling to many advocates because this is a program that there's a long process for many people to receive family-based visas. For nationals, say, from Mexico or the Philippines, it can take 10 to 20 or more years to get your close family member here in the United States. It's not an immediate process.
So it's not this wave that he seems to imply with this phrase he likes to use.
No. And so just to add on to the diversity visa program, so that diversity visa program is to allow others from countries that don't have many immigrants to the United States. And so there's a lottery in which people can enter and are chosen. They can be chosen from this lottery to be granted these diversity visas. Of course, they have to still fulfill certain eligibility requirements. And it's also important to note that for both processes, diversity visas or family-based visas, the U.S. government does rigorous review of these applications.
Rachel Reyes, we just have about a minute left. We are very happy to have you on the program today. So is there anything else that you want to say in closing about this trend we're seeing from the Trump administration, including the end of a temporary protected status for hundreds of thousands of immigrants living in the United States?
Yes. So I think it's quite alarming to continuously see these various announcements and different actions to eliminate programs that assist people in need. TPS, like you said, is important for the United States as a leader in the world to protect people and help them in times of crisis. As we move forward, it's important, I think, to look at how the negotiations around the Dreamers and DACA continue. Advocates are really support the passage of a clean Dream Act that's not at all tied to budgets and border walls and whatnot. I would just encourage everyone to be on high alert that people are in need are being affected by these devastating decisions.
Rachel Reyes with the Center for Migration Studies, we thank you very much for joining us today on the program.
Thank you.
Again, that was Rachel Reyes, the Communications Director for the Center for Migration Studies in New York City. You're listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. So we have with us today Dennis Chinoy with PICA, Power and Community Alliances, based in Bangor, U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities, and the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities Project based in Bangor, which has been involved in a relationship with the town of Coraske in Chalatenango, El Salvador. Dennis Chinoy is also the member of an upcoming delegation to El Salvador this month, focusing specifically on migration and the issues surrounding it. Welcome to the program, Dennis.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So we're talking today specifically about reactions to the elimination of TPS for El Salvador and the 200,000 Salvadorans living in the United States right now, and of course within the context of this broad hostile immigration policy we're seeing from the Trump administration. But you've been working many years with Salvadorans. Can you give us a reaction to the elimination of TPS?
Sure. It's awful, and it's maybe just a little background might
Yes, please,
help.
Contextualize however...
TPS has only become a bit of a household word in the last few weeks, but, you know, just to be clear about it, and it can be a little confusing. So TPS stands for Temporary Protective Status for particular people in different countries. El Salvador was one of them, and the justification for that program was that something had happened in any of those countries that made it at least temporarily unsafe and maybe unfair for people to be forced to return to those countries given the conditions that obtained. In El Salvador's situation, it happened to be an earthquake in 2001, which destroyed a lot of infrastructure. But that program has been re-approved over the last 16 years on a regular basis. And so, in fact, it wasn't really that was the impetus, but it's not really about whether something is temporary or not. It was really the decision for revoking that has very little to do with, as the administration said, putting the temporary back in temporary protective status. It wasn't about that. It wasn't any more than it would have been last year or the year before that. It's really about a campaign to depopulate our country of people who are brown and speak Spanish, who are here legally or illegally, and this is just part and parcel of that kind of campaign. So it's really a cruel and somewhat ugly decision that takes people who've been here for close to 20 years and, you know, who work hard and pay taxes and have children and families, not any really different in kind than DACA, which is what the other thing people are hearing about these days. And it basically says you have to leave and will be subject to deportation. In a year and a half, unless something else is done, and so that is really what the decision is about. It's not about rapists or gang members or drug mules or anything else. That's what it's about.
So we outlined in our earlier interview, Haitians have had their TPS revoked, Sudanese, and now we're looking towards Hondurans following suit. And in the case of El Salvador, as you said, the latest wave was from the earthquakes. Initially, it was because of the civil war in the early 90s, but has been renewed as the as whatever the current administration has discretion to note that there are other things at play, like drought, poverty, gang violence, other conditions that would make it very difficult for a country such as El Salvador to reabsorb 200,000 Salvadorans who, as you've brought up in previous programs, also really contribute to stabilizing the economy in El Salvador through remittances.
Right. Just one difference is really just a difference in scale. The number of Salvadorans who are here under TPS, as you said, which are well over 200,000, is far more than any other group. So it's just the scope of the decision and its impact on families, as well as on a national economy of El Salvador, is different in that way. And so, you know, the solution, the administration could have, taken other things into account in terms of if you wanted to look at the chapter and verse of what would make TPS actually reapprovable, and those things you mentioned could be considered factors, but they chose not to be. I think, going forward, this is a done deal in terms of an executive decision, and now it's really up to Congress to decide whether they're going to find a way not to reverse the decision, not to rescind TPS, but basically to say there's 200,000 people in the country who are being subjected to something that's really cruel and unusual, and are we going to find a way to make to find a path for them to be here legally, whether it's a path to citizenship or permanent residency or whatever. And the people who are covered under TPS are really no different in kind than the rest of the millions, rather than 200,000, of people who've been here who may not have been here with documents, but who've made a life here, mm-hmm. and who are going to be deported if the administration has anything to say about it. So that's going to be the project going forward, and there's actually reason to be optimistic about it, even though it's currently kind of a shock and heartbreaking that this was done by the administration really as a sop, a little bit more red meat to its base of people who either don't want brown people here or people who are aggrieved by economically or culturally aggrieved and have been made to feel that someone else somehow has cut in line ahead of them and is depriving them of things they could otherwise enjoy. And so that's why it makes sense to get rid of those people. But, if we know who these people are, that's a very inaccurate depiction of who they are, because we, as a sister city project in Bangor, who has had a 20-year relationship with people in El Salvador, as well as with the many of the people who have actually been subjected to forced migration who live elsewhere in the United States, we know these people. They are brothers and sisters. They are hardworking people. They are their lives are far more rugged than most anyone else in America, and they are bearing up. They pay taxes. They have jobs. They have families. They send large chunks of their meager income home to support families in El Salvador, and these are good people. And over the next many months, we'll be hearing stories about who these people are and what is actually being done, rather than rhetoric and sloganeering.
Maybe we can take a second here for you to talk a little bit about the delegation that you and others from Maine will be going down on specifically to hear those stories in a more formal way about the impacts of migration and why people immigrate, if you want to talk a little bit about that. And yeah. We know you're in touch with people and stories already on this, but if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Sure, and this actually just happens to dovetail with this recent decision. This was planned before that, but it will be a delegation of six people going in late January for a week and a half or so. And the reason we're going, focusing on immigration in particular, is that we've had a longstanding acquaintance with issues of immigration and trade, and in the past we're very familiar with some of the reasons that have caused forced migration from El Salvador and other places in Central America in terms of trade and NAFTA and busted rural farmers who can't grow their corn and can't feed their families and who come here and who are essentially economic refugees, although no one has, officially these are not acknowledged to be refugees. And and that's been, so we're very familiar with that story, but that's ongoing. But, recently the demographics of immigration has changed a lot from what's called the Northern Triangle of Central America and Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and that the conditions that actually are much more impelling of continued migration are the more classic factors that you think of when you think about people who actually need asylum. That is, these are people who are fleeing gang violence and extortion and have had family members killed and are afraid for their own lives and are fleeing the country either internally or, in the case of migrants, externally, mm-hmm. to really find safe haven. That's kind of a different demographic and a different story than the one we're more accustomed to hearing about. So we're going back to El Salvador to the communities that we know and to the social organizations that support them to learn more about that.
Great. Well, we hope that you're able to come back on the program or share recordings from some of those discussions. So Dennis Chinoy, in the last couple of minutes we have, share with us any conclusionary thoughts that you might have about Trump's hostile immigration policies in general, or this particular elimination of TPS for a number of countries that we're seeing right now.
Sure. Well, I know I'm sharing your program with the person from the Center for Migration Studies, who I didn't have a chance to hear, but I know that the head of that very good organization offered some initial thoughts about what this meant as well. And I think very eloquently characterized this as a lose-lose situation for both countries. For our country, it just makes us a more xenophobic, hostile, unwelcoming place. It constricts our workforce at a time that we actually need people who do in various sectors the work that immigrants do. It's going to hurt a lot of businesses. It's going to hurt a lot of construction and other sites.
Rebuilding efforts, for instance, in the hurricanes.
Yeah, it's going to lose us some of the most hardworking, entrepreneurial, creative, patriotic residents of our country, and it's just, and it's also just painful for the rest of us, to watch this happening, and it's kind of the face of what our country is becoming. So that's just hard to watch. But, and in El Salvador, what this does, we can't really underestimate where this, if this is really to go forward, it destroys long-established lives and families of people who live here. It destroys the family economies in El Salvador of people who depend on remittances for their livelihood, which averages somewhere $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000 a year, which per family for a person who's in this country helping to support that in aggregate. Those, if you multiply 200,000 by, I won't do the math on the air, but $4,000 a pop times the large numbers of Salvadorans who can no longer provide that will really torpedo the Salvadoran economy as a whole, because a large fraction of the GDP is actually comprised of that, and it subjects people who will have to, if they return to their country, many people will not really feel like they have a country because they've lived here for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Their children of those potential deportees, will have to figure out whether they're going to stay here or go home to a country they don't know, possibly a language they don't speak, and the very same conditions that currently obtain in El Salvador, in terms of it being a pretty violent place where people are subject to lots of threats and vulnerability, it makes those people very vulnerable, even more vulnerable in some ways than native Salvadorans, because these people will be targets of gang violence and extortion when they return home. And so it's just... it's a many splendored tragedy as it stands now. But I guess I'd also say that this story is not over. And if ever there was as we see it in U.S. El Salvador sister cities and as an opportunity for mutual solidarity. It gives people in the U.S. and people in El Salvador something to work on together to right these wrongs. We both suffer in our own ways from it.
Dennis Chinoy with U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities and PICA Power and Community Alliances in Bangor. Thanks again so much for joining us and sharing your perspective.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Meredith. It's great listening to your show and from time to time being right on it.
Thank you.
Bye.
And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio.